Start again. Today is the 6th of July, 2018. The 23rd day of Tammuz, Tavshinayin Ches. Right, today we are doing Halach de Perchafei. What is the most prominent halach over the course of this parak? That is the mitzvah of Shemitah, as well as the mitzvah of Yovel. It somewhat ties in a little bit of it together. So studying the area of halacha of Shemitah is a little bit different than other areas of halacha, and that is because for many years it was not really thought to be halacha l'maisa. It wasn't thought to be practical. The Jews weren't in Eretz Yisrael. Even those that were not necessarily farming very much, not right. Have the ability to own land. And therefore, it just was sort of a lost area of halacha, and therefore is not really found in Shulchan Aruch. There is, I believe, a section dealing with it in the section of Shulchan Aruch, but it's certainly not given its full due. Even Rav Yosef Karo, he wrote the Shulchan Aruch while in Eretz Yisrael already, but I don't think the Jews were farming to the extent, certainly not the corporate types of shilas in terms of the laws of Shemitah that come up today.
Yeah.
So, you agree?
He was there during a terms occupation where most of the people had rich daddies.
Right, most of it was being supported from outside. Yeah. They were living in Tzfat. I don't think there was too much.
Right.
You don't see too much farmland in the Tzfat vicinity either. There is practical, and there is some. Even these halachas don't just apply. These halachas don't just apply to regular, to farmers in Eretz Yisrael, but there also are people who have their own little private garden in their own yard. So the laws of Shemitah should apply to them just as well. In fact, one might be a little more machmir for them than they might be on a farm. So what are some of the halachos that come up here? So, just practically speaking, how is it supposed to work when one learns the words of the Chumash or one learns the words of the Gemara? So the laws of Shemitah are that the seventh year all things must stop and the land is going to be hefker. So there are those that observe it in that way, b'zman hazeh, that they have their fields and they leave it totally hefker over the course of the seventh year. There are tzedakah organizations that have set up ways of supporting these farmers during Shemitah, so they don't get their full allotment, but at least they get some amount of money to help them out. And they put up signs on their fields. Rabbi Eisenman was fond of hanging up these signs in Torah Academy that he took pictures of, where these signs say, it's the year of Shemitah. Anybody who wants to come can come and partake of the field. It's our pleasure to have you on our field, and take whatever you like. So that is the... And that is practiced today of some people that are observing the laws of Shemitah. Now, it is a little difficult both on both ends. Number one, for the entire country to shut down in that way. So when we would want to say, oh yes, well, we have the promise from Hashem and everything's going to be good, but it's a little hard to swallow that, particularly because, as we'll get to later on, the mitzvah of Shemitah might only be derabanan b'zman hazeh. So that's a factor that lays in. I'm not sure, I don't know if the bracha is promised when Shemitah is only being observed, when Shemitah is only being observed on a derabanan level. Beyond that, there is also the problem of, that might work, even if all the farmers say, okay, we're putting down our hose and we're turning off our tractors for the year, we're just not going to do anything. So that's fine for the farmers, but what about the dude who lives in Tel Aviv or in Yerushalayim or in Tzfat or in Tveria? Where are they supposed to get their vegetables from? So great, let's travel out to the farms. That's a little difficult to imagine how that's going to work out. Beyond that, there is also, Israel is not just a farm economy for itself, but they export as well. They are on the plus side of production. So that leads to its own issues. How can one permissibly export their produce over the course of the year of Shemitah? Okay, so dealing with that, the exporting issue, I'm not sure how to deal with that, but or at least that is certainly beyond the scope of the half hour share that we have. But let's just discuss the most simple way of explaining of dealing with this in Eretz Yisrael today, although it's not very simple at all. In terms of its halachic validity, before you get into selling land and things like that, how can someone from Yerushalayim get fruit without physically going to the land and picking out a cucumber off of the garden? How could they get their... Well, I guess a cucumber is a... Well, a cucumber is technically a fruit, but is halakhically a vegetable.
Right.
Okay. So how can he get his cucumbers or his lettuce or his wheat without going out to the field himself? Is there another way of doing it? Totally halakhically speaking, how can one do that?
Besides getting an Arab land.
Forget about Arab land. Very simply, a Jew has let his land lay fallow, and a Jew who lives in Jerusalem, who is a sofer for a living, right? He wants to eat a vegetable. So how can he get that vegetable?
Could you have the bet in?
Without getting it himself. So the way without getting it himself would be to...
Have a
send the shliach. Forget a beis. Send the shliach.
Yes.
Send someone else is going to get him on his behalf. Now, is he permitted to pay that shliach? So the answer is yes, that he is permitted to pay that shliach. Now, beyond that,
so the only one that doesn't get recompensed is the farmer himself, farmer's land.
Well, the farmer himself. So the farmer could be that shliach.
Ah.
Right. So the farmer could be the one that is going to be that is going to be paid. So the
Wow, that's interesting.
Okay, so that's one thing. So that's one way to set up a payment that the stuff is going to grow. He doesn't need his entire field of cucumbers. Other people do need the field of cucumbers. So rather than paying me for the cucumber itself, you could pay me for the effort involved with taking care of this cucumber. Now that could work also on a small scale thing, though. I mean, I could go and pay somebody to go and take out a few cucumbers. Okay, what about Walmart or Target? I believe Target is open in Israel now. Can Target say, "Oh, well, we're going to pay a messenger to get us our whole, 12 crates of cucumbers"? So that's not really doable. It could only be this idea of harvesting can only be for oneself, unless the Tosefta suggests. There's the Tosefta is like a list of prices that is found in the back of Gemara's, or the back of Mishnayos. Tosefta suggests that you could do that under the auspices of Basin. That Basin can go and oversee this, which has become known today as the Otzer HaBeistin method. What is the Otzer HaBeistin method? So Otzer HaBeistin, a Beistin, is overseeing this process where they're going to sort of assign the task of some people to go and purchase. That stuff comes in. People will buy it, will pay it at a supermarket, whatever they pay for it, and the price is in theory a little bit off because you're not paying for the produce itself, you're just paying for the effort involved in the produce, but okay. It's relatively a similar amount of money, and Basin kind of oversees this shift of stuff that is taking place. Now there is a bit of a problem with that. So that's referred to the Otzer HaBeistin method. If you go to a supermarket in Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year, so there, from what I understand, I don't think I haven't been there in the Shemitah year, and I think the first time I went to Israel, the year after my Bar Mitzvah, I think was the Shemitah year. Cheshbon that out. I guess that would be 21 plus years ago. I'm not sure I was paying attention to how things were put in the supermarket, but I'm told that that's how it works. That if you go into the supermarket, there is a section called Otzer HaBeistin, and that's this kind of stuff. Now, the only problem with this kind of stuff is that, again, farmers aren't doing any work on the field either. I mean, it's not just a problem of harvesting, it's also a problem of doing all of the work. So yes, there is stuff that grows, but there is not a lot of stuff that grows, and that stuff is then going to run out over the course of the year. In the beginning part of the year, you'll see there's the section of Otzer HaBeistin looks like it does like any other year, but once you start getting a few months into the year, so the amount of produce is going to get depleted. Also, the amount of farmers that are involved with this is not a full amount of farmers. Most farmers are concerned. They're involved with what we call the Heter Mechira, which we'll maybe get to a little bit later. They're selling their land to non-Jews and working in that way. They're relying on that leniency.
Yeah.
And they're working on and they're using that. So if one wants to not, quote unquote, not rely on the selling of the land and only rely on this, so the Otzer HaBeistin works at least for a little bit of the year. Now keep in mind that fruit is 100% Shemitah produce. That is full fledged Shemitah. So Shemitah produce has its own requirements, has its own halachos and its own chumras that are going to be applied to it. Number one is that it It has to be Hefker, which perhaps even requires the active. Does it actively require somebody to pronounce this field is here by Hefker? You need to put a sign up, or maybe not necessarily. It's just Hefker on its own. So that's one issue. Number one. Number two is that right can't be sold straight out. It has to be, rather, you could just be paid for the work. Number three, and this is a complicated thing over the year in Eretz Yisrael, during Shemitah, and that is that it can't be wasted. That you can't waste the produce. So what does that mean? It means you can't throw it out in the garbage. It has Kedushas Shvius. So what do you do with it? So you eat whatever you can eat. Right? But what about the stuff that you... what about leftovers? What about the core? What about the stuff that you put in front of your 2-year-old child and they don't finish? Right, what about all of that stuff? So it retains Kedusha Shvius and it actually can't be thrown into the garbage. It's almost like Seamus. Like it's kept. Seamus is you would keep it in it and it stays forever and then you got to bury it someplace. This stuff has to be left to rot. You're almost going to have to compost it or something, or you can collect it. There are ways of collecting. Right, it has to be done in a some type. Well, I don't think it's just sufficient to put in a bag and put in the garbage. I think it's got to be compost. It's got to be left to rot in a specific way. You're familiar with this? You saw this?
Yeah, separate trash cans.
It's a separate trash can, but then what happens to it?
It disappears,
which, by the way, makes this very difficult for restaurants to do. I mean, this is could work in a from person's home,
yeah.
But in a restaurant, how are you going to deal with each person's plate, what they kept and what they didn't eat, and how much they finished, what they didn't finish? So it becomes a pretty complicated process how to do it. Number four is that you can't be exported, as we talked about before. And number five is that it might be subject to the rules of Biur. What are the rules of Biur? So we made reference to this over the course of, I think Rashi talked about this when we learned the Chumash itself. The rules of Biur are is that you can't keep more, once there is no food left out in the field, you can't have it in your house. So what does it mean that you can't have it in your house? So either it means you got to burn it, that's what the Rambam seems to say, you got to like totally get rid of it. Others say, no, you got to pronounce it to be Hefker, you got to make it Hefker. So keeping track of that Zman Bior, I don't know how that is how that is practically done.
You mean if you get stuff like non-perishable stuff, like, I don't know, it's wheat or something like that, you can keep in your house, yet.
Well, it has to be Hefker, so it can't be Hefker, right? It's like saying, oh, I'm being Mafker in my chametz and keeping it in my kitchen, right? I don't think you can do that. I don't know the details on, but it sounds like making it Hefker means you really got to make it Hefker. That's at least the Ramban. The Ramban Chumash is a long Ramban that we didn't do the other day. I thought Bruce would get annoyed. The Ramban kind of gives you a halachic survey of the way he perceives Hilchos Shemitah, but the Ramban and the Rambam often are in conflict as to their understanding of the laws of Shemitah. So, anyways, that is in some ways an ideal of how to keep the laws of Shemitah in a practical urban environment. I mean, you're going to do this. It's oats are based in process, and people will, farmers will be able to make a little bit of money because they're working on behalf of those people sending it. But practically, for an entire country, it becomes very difficult to run things that way. On a national level, and you also have the problem of the stuff having kedusha shvius of it being fully sanctified with shemitah. Shemitah status, which is great for those people that are observant of the laws of Shemitah, but to place this stuff in the hands of those that couldn't care less, that becomes difficult. So running that on a national level is challenging.
So all the food during Shemitah yet?
What?
Is elevated to a status of a higher status?
Yes. It's Kedusha Shvius, yeah.
All the food that you eat.
Well, the food that you eat is eaten.
So the food that's left in the land, one can't just stay there.
Well, stuff in the land can stay in the land. We don't have to actively go and save all of the produce. But once you have it, it has to be treated with respect.
You take it. Wow.
Right. Okay. So what do we do? So the other method. There's two other methods then of getting... What?
Do you say a special bracha
over? Overeat it? I don't think there's a mitzvah to eat shvius fruit. Food or fruit. Yeah.
You handle like every other food.
One second. Rabbi Shmurlo is calling the second time. Yes, Rabbi Shmurlo? Yes?
Dispose of it.
Baruch Hashem. Okay. Len will be happy. Yeah, Len Small here is with me. He'll be happy. I'll let him know. Okay, Yashika, have a good Shabbos. Bye-bye.
We're up.
Yes, we're up, Len. Eruv is up for those listening online.
Yay.
Okay, so the other, I guess, two methods very quickly of how to get, well, of how to deal with Shvius in Eretz Yisrael if you're Orthodox, is number two is just don't eat fruits and vegetables for a year. Okay. The other option is to import fruit and vegetables. Now, that's problematic. First of all, a lot of the countries in the surrounding area won't sell to Israel, so that's one issue. Those that do, it just becomes uncomfortable that, oh, we're going to eat all foreign imported fruits and vegetables when Israel itself is an exporting fruit and vegetable economy. Right, so that's it rubs many people the wrong way.
And actually, you can meet within Israel, but not biblical Israel. You can eat that.
Yes, there's not so much area that is really able to grow. There's only so much land that fits into that category. Well, if you assume that such a thing exists,
it's
not so much area that
was in Israel.
What?
Was the Arava is not luckily Israel? Arava.
Arava.
You know, the south, they just come valley.
Yeah, okay.
Is that, I don't know.
There's also a land that's not going to grow very much fruits and vegetables.
They do, but then
what about, what do you say about fruits and vegetables? What about wheat?
The wheat also, yeah. I mean, there is wheat. Wheat is one of the shivaminim. I'm not sure how much. I mean, I remember when I was in Israel a couple of years ago on the with the Federation mission, we drove by some actually pretty large wheat fields.
But
I don't know. I don't really know proportionally. There's a very large wheat field that's right outside State Road, and then there's a large wheat field that takes up half the state of Kansas. You know, there's a different amount of proportions. I'm not sure how much wheat in Israel is actually grown in Israel. I don't know.
And so when you go in the markets, they have signs in Hebrew where each product is from. And they won't, it's not in English, it's always in Hebrew.
Ah, okay. It makes people, those that are, you know, every year Rabbi Javelin would publish I'm not sure I want to say, I just revealed the name. But he would push this effort, and so, you know, he finds it somewhat offensive that the OU will not put a heksher on heter mechira products. Right? We'll get to heter mechira in a second, where you sell the land to a non-Jew. So that's a questionable way. So the OU is machmer on it.
Right.
So he's like, so what do we end up doing? We end up importing things from outside of Israel into Israel. In fact, the Israeli army, from what I was told, the last Shemitah was the Israeli army now accepts Haredim, so Haredim don't hold of the Heter Mechira. So the Israeli army is not going to hold of the Heter Mechira, and they're going to import things from some of them enemy lands. So it leads to some difficult conclusions.
Like your chickens, your cattle, and all that. They,
no, that's.
But they have to eat or they feed.
Yeah, they're not bound by Shemitah. They could eat whatever they want. Yeah, they're going to eat. Don't worry, the animals can eat. So. So the idea that was figured out certainly in the late 1800s when Jews started going back to Israel and redeveloping the land, and then you ran into Shemitah. Shemitah would have been a big problem. The Shilas were sent back to Europe. How to deal with this? Can we sell all the land to a non-Jew? So. Is that does that work, or does that? What are some of the issues involved with selling the land to a non-Jew? Well, one of the issues is whether there's. How much time do we have here?
The same concept of selling a guy on Pesach.
What? The same concept. Well, yeah. But you're ending up. You're going to end up doing a different thing. When you sell your stuff on Pesach, so the non-Jew owns your chametz. Some of it stays in your property. Okay, but he has access to your property. It's a little bit of a more complicated thing when you're dealing with Israel. You're selling the land. So first of all, does it matter? One issue that is brought up with this is, does it matter that the land, it's still land in Israel, so just because you sold it to a non-Jew, does that mean that now there is no more Kedusha on it? So this is dealt with, and there is some question about that topic, but that is, okay, you know, that is one question that needs to be resolved. Another question needs to be resolved, and the Heterim that wrote this in the first place, is that they said, well, we're going to permit it for now, because, first of all, it's the Shasat Chak Gadol, it's a very difficult situation, the Yishuv can entirely collapse, so would that apply today? You know, that's a question. What does collapse mean? So that's one question. But beyond that, because Shemitah right now is only Durabanan. So why is Shemitah only Durabanan? Why would one suggest that Shemitah is only rabbinic? So if one issue might be is the question of whether there is Kedushas Eretz Yisrael after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. That's one question that is out there. We understand that after the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, there was no Kedusha. I think Moharei Rishonim agreed to that. Second Beis HaMikdash is a little more questionable. The Rambam distinguishes between the two. The Rambam writes that the first Beis HaMikdash, the first conquering of the land of Israel by Yehoshua was done in a warlike fashion, while the second time we were given permission to be there. So for some reason that affects the amount of Kedusha, that's what the Rambam says, and therefore the first Beis HaMikdash after it was destroyed, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, there's no more Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. I should clarify. There's different types of Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. One is the Kedusha that Hashem said to Avram, this land is going to be your land. So that Kedusha never goes away. There's always Kedusha to the land of Israel. But the idea that there's Kedusha of Bnei Yisrael being in Eretz Yisrael, that's a question whether that stuck around or not. So after the first Beis HaMikdash, it didn't. After the second Beis HaMikdash, so more Rishonim say that it did. The Rambam said that it did. Most Rishonim assume that the Kedusha of the second Beis HaMikdash is retained, so therefore there is Kedusha. There is Kedusha ad yom hazeh. Now, the other question, however, is that there's a Gemara in Maseches Gittin that makes the following comment that says the mitzvah of Yovel was not observed during the entire time of the second Beis HaMikdash.
Really?
Why was the mitzvah of Yovel not observed during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash? Because most of the Jews did not come back to the land of Israel. The majority of Jews stayed in Bavel, which is interesting. Its own idea is interesting. I personally don't know of much history of the Jewish people in Bavel during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. I'm not sure what was going on there. It seems like, at least from our perspective, the view of Israel as a nation shifted back to Israel, despite the fact that only a minority of them went back, and this was mourned about in the book of Ezra and Nehemiah. The Gemara says that there was no Yovel during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash because most of the Jews did not come back. Who cares that most of the Jews did not come back? So the pasuk tells us, that brings us to the Liberty Bell pasuk, Krasim Dror Ba'aretz V'chol Yishvei Aleha, that we're going to proclaim liberty throughout the land unto all its inhabitants thereof. And the Gemara comments, when Bias Kulchem, when all of Bnei Yisrael, at least the majority of Bnei Yisrael, is present, so then the mitzvah of Yovel will be applicable. When it's not, when the majority of Jews are not present, so then it's not going to be applicable. The Gemara makes a similar comment with regards to the mitzvah of Challah. The mitzvah of Challah as well, the Gemara says, is only observed on a level of the Rabbanan, because the majority of Jews are not present in the land of Israel. Now it does not, so the Rambam then extends that from the laws of Challah to the laws of Truma and Meiser. He does not say whether it applies to Shemitah explicitly. He does say maybe that it applies to the laws of Shemitah explicitly. It's just we're not really sure what the Rambam said. What am I talking about? So the Rambam in Perek Yud, Halacha Tes, says as follows. It says, Zuzman Sha Yovel Noeg, Noeg Din Eved Ivri, that when Yovel is Noeg, the laws of Eved Ivri apply. V'din Batei Arichom, V'din Stadi Charam, V'din Stei Achuzu, Mekablin Ger Toshav, right? All the mitzvahs that we talked about over the course of this Perek. So the Rambam says, all of that applies when the mitzvah of Yovel applies. V'no Heges Shvius Ba'aretz, V'ashmatas Ksafim B'chol Makom Min HaTorah. And the rules of Shvius in Eretz and the Shemitas Ksafim Doraisa, it sounds like, Minatora. However, when Yovel is not Noheg, Ein Noheg Ed Aviv V'lo Bat Erechom V'lo Sayach Chuzo V'lo Sayach Haram V'ein Mekabim Ger Toshav Noheges Shvius period. So none of those laws apply, I mean the laws of the inheritance going back and forth, the laws of the Arichom and you get a year to redeem it, all those kinds of things, so that's not going to apply. V'noheges Shvius Ba'aretz Midivrehem V'chein shmitas ksafim b'chol makom b'divrehem k'mo shebiarnu. Second, sure. So there's a little bit of a difficulty in how to read that Rambam. Why? So, the Torah is much. Ena yovel eno noeg echan mikol el chutz mishvius ba'aretz. Right, so there's different additions to the Rambam how to read this. It says, "Lo b'chein hashmat v'zman she'ein yovel noeg ein noeg evi v'lustei charam ve'ein mekablin derek toshav v'no heges shvius ba'aretz v'chein shmitach k'safim b'chol makom medivrehem." So the question of whether medivrehem is there once or twice. In the older editions of the Rambam, it's not there twice. It seems to imply that maybe shvius ba'aretz does apply on a level of Doraisa, and maybe in the Frankel Ram, the modern edition seems to imply that it doesn't apply on a level of Doraisa. It's a little bit unclear whether that requirement, it's not explicit that that requirement of Chol Yishveh Aleha applies to Shemitah or not. So that's a major question. So some say yes. The Kesef Mishnah says that yes, it does apply on a level of Doraisa. The Torah says that it applies on a level of the Rabbanon, and that's Beis Yosef assumes that way. The Beis Yosef assumes that it applies on a level of the Rabbanon. That's a little unclear, but they really just quoted a steer. The Kesef Mishnah says it applies. The Kesef Mishnah was written by Rabbi Yosef Karo. The Beis Yosef was written by Rabbi Yosef Karo. It's a little bit ambiguous how to apply this. Whether it's not so clear to say that Shemitah is only derabbanan when Yovel is not being activated. The second question that exists is what defines Rov Yoshveh Aleh? What defines the majority of the Jewish people? So, do the majority of the Jewish people live in Eretz Yisrael today?
No.
It's getting pretty close, though.
Yeah.
It's getting pretty close.
Last week, the population of Jews in Israel just exceeded the United States.
Yes. So this past week, I think that's existed already. What?
No, I think it was the first time.
How many?
No, I believe exceeding the United States, I believe, has happened already. I think Israel was the most populated Jewish country already in the last Shemitah process. And I believe they assumed that for the next Shemitah process, they would become more, Israel would have the majority of the Jewish people in it. So perhaps that makes this entire thing go away. Although perhaps it does not for a second. Perhaps it doesn't. We'll get to it in a second. But yes, that's... Yeah, and by the way, and that also, how do they know how many Jews there are in the United States?
Right.
So they add up all the Federation surveys and figure out how many, they figure out in that way. How many of them are actually Jewish?
Right.
So it probably is the case by the next Shemitah or the Shemitah after that, the majority of Jewish people will live in Eretz Yisrael, assuming everything continues with the demographic trends that have been taking place. Now, does that mean that we have a real problem, that the Heter Mechira is certainly not applicable under those circumstances? So, not necessarily. What does Bias Kulchem mean? Does it mean the majority of Jewish people that we know about? Or perhaps some, I remember going through this in the last Shemitah, maybe it means you need to have the majority of tribes present, or you need to have the majority of each tribe present. It's not so clear, it just means raw population between the two sides. That doesn't seem... So maybe it wouldn't have to do with it if it has to do with the Kedusha of the land. I mean, it could be that the Kedusha of the land is based on that. But we generally assume that there is Kedusha to the land, even in that the Kedusha of that area still exists. Our Rishonim say it doesn't. Right? That the actual Makom HaMikdash, some say there's no Kedusha there, Bizman
Hazeh. Yeah, there's two of them. There's people on there.
Okay. So then the final challenge that, when I say final, but another challenge that is had, major challenge that is had with the Heter Mechira of selling things, that there happens to be a prohibition of selling land in Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews. That the Pasuk tells us, Lo Sechanim, that one should not give gifts to non-Jews. And the Gemara interprets that not just as being gifts, but giving them a foothold within the land, to give them a place that they're able to live in the land of Israel. So some pointed out that Heter Mechira is getting around a Issur D'Rabbanan of Shemitah, but you're violating an Issur D'Oraisa by selling the land in the first place. So how could you go ahead and sell that land in Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews? So there are a bunch of answers that are given to this question, but all of those are issues that are surrounding which we'll get to another time perhaps, maybe when we get up to Lo Sechanim in the Book of Devarim. But all of those are some of the significant issues having to do with Shemitah, its observance always, and its observance certainly, Bizman Hazeh. All right, have a good day, have a good Shabbos. And